Log Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rick Bergeron. And Tony has some next ring. what happened? Yep. What happened to your boy? What happened to your boy?
Well, you know what? It was, Novalev had a great game plan. That's one. You know, he didn't leave himself open. He went there, he was very patient, which I really didn't expect. The other thing, and I remember saying this to my dad, right before the fight started, my dad had dozed off for a little bit during the one prelim fight, and they were showing Hopkins warming up in the locker room, and when my dad woke up and they walked in the ring, I said, Dad, I said, he didn't look good. I said, he looked. And I hate to say this, and I hope Bernard's not listening, he looked like an old man in the locker room. He looked like a 50-year-old man, you know, great kid, 50 years old, but warming up, I'm like, this is not looking like a guy that is, you know, not even past his prime. He looks old, he looks slow, his reflexes look shot. And then in the first round, you know, Kovalev came out, as I expected, you know, really put a lot of pressure on him. And as you saw in my report last week, I said that Hopkins is going to try to keep the first round to basically, like, nothing happened. And that's why I said, like, how do you try to predict the punch out, the punch is landed, I think something like 7-3 or something stupid like that, or 7-4. And for a while he was losing the round, nothing happening. And then Kovalev hit him, and he went down. And I don't think he was necessarily hurt bad, but at the same time, it was like, oh, damn, this guy hit hard. It's harder than Trinidad. It's harder than Antoine Eckler. It's harder than those guys. And then from there, it was like, he was going to try to, you know, play. He didn't have the timing of the reflexes. And the people get hit because of golf, and he was trying to stay out of harm's way. And he got hit with a good right hand in the 8th round and buckled him. And then in the 12th round, you know, he got hit with some shots. At one point, it was like, you know, he got stunned a little bit. But as long as he was throwing occasional punch back, my fear was the referee would stop it just because he wasn't punching. But he threw enough punches to last his hit. All the judges had it completely right.
Yeah, and I thought that the shots that really they fought rattled him, they said he was stunned earlier on in the fight, really weren't that bad. They exaggerated a little bit. I also noticed that he got hit on the top of the head a lot. So I think maybe he was looking down a little too much. Possibly also he was trying to get into a defensive fight. He needed to be more offensive. He kind of treated this fight like he was fighting Bebu Chumanov again. And the news here was, you know, you can't really counterpunch a guy who's always coming at you. You know, you have to always come back at him to make it a fight. And Hopkins had, like, so little offense in this fight. He kept, like, yelling at the screen to start punching, you know, because they just didn't. Seemed like he wanted to punch a lot. It seemed like he wanted to cruise through it and survive rather than try to dominate the fight. And, you know, maybe he just got touched a couple times early and, you know, it hurt him just enough to be cautious. But I kept thinking to myself, geez, you know, he's not going to be able to get close enough to get a hit by it.
Around like 6 and 7, I think it was 6 or 7 round, they're like, Kovalev's never gone past 8. This is Hopkins' plan to get him in the deep waters. And I'm like, right. So this is also a guy that hasn't knocked anybody out in over 10 years. And even if he gets him in the deep waters, he's already way behind on the cards. You know, he can win the last 4 rounds, 9, 10, 11, 12, and still be losing 8-4 with a knockdown in there. Kind of like the first four, when he's in 93. If you go back and watch that fight, they're really, really cautious. And Jones just did minimally more than Hopkins did in the first eight rounds. And he swept the first eight rounds. Hopkins did much better rounds 9 through 12, won all four of those rounds. Hurt Jones a little bit in the 12th round. Well, they did the distance. Roy Jones won eight rounds before because Hopkins landed on too late.
Well, we got Psychic Tom with us.
All right, guys. Hey, Tony, you know, like you said, is someone making fun of you about your way-off prediction? Buddy boy, you've been running the table for a long time. I mean, you've been calling the rounds. You've been calling the interviews. Everybody slips once in a while. Like I said, this stuff ain't easy. But, you know, I think Kathy Dubas said something that we should all remember looking forward at the press conference. She said that a lot of times in big fights, the thing that you don't is least likely to happen and the thing that most people don't think will happen, happens. Now, when you think this thing was going to a distance and it was a shutout, like I was talking to a friend today that didn't catch it, and I said, well, it went the distance, a shutout. He said, oh, Bernard shut him out, huh? I said, no, the other way around. Who could have figured? I just think Bernard was so great at that press conference. I mean, he didn't make any excuse. I mean, this is a man who knows how to win with class and lose with dignity. I mean, my respect for him just grows constantly. I mean, the first thing, you know, he was talking and he said, age is not a factor. If I didn't feel I could win it, I shouldn't be in there. And he said, if we start making an issue out of age, that's going to take away from Sergey's achievement, and that's not the way that it should be. I mean, I just, my respect for him just grows because, I mean, I really respected him after the Kelly Pavlik fight when he went over and gave Pavlik a good pep talk and the way he handled his loss. I'm just in awe of him. You know, so what can we say?
And, Tom, I don't know if you were on the air when I was saying it. You know, talking to my dad, he goes off during the prelim fight, so I wasn't waking him up until the main event was going to start. And I remember watching Hopkins in the rest of the world. And as I said, I hope Hopkins doesn't hear me. But the thing is, I said, he looked like an old man in there. He didn't warm it up. I said, you know, he just looked like he didn't have that snap to his punches. He just looked like his timing was off. He looked like his reflexes were shot. He just looked old in the dressing room. And I said, "Boy, I didn't. I had a bad vibe as soon as I saw that." And then the first round was going just as I said it would. You know, Hopkins was going to move. Hopkins was going to use angles. It was going to be a low punch output round. I think I predicted something like 7-3 or 7-4 punches landed, and it just happened to be like that 6 or 7 punch from Kovalev that put him down. I think that really Hopkins was like, damn, this guy hits harder than anybody I've ever faced before. So I really got to, you know, be more cautious.
Yeah. And I think in addition to the power, I think we've seen a lot of ring intelligence out of Sergey because when he would start to get a rally going, he didn't want to burn his cardio because he knows how smart Bernard is.
Right.
He knows how hard it is to knock Bernard out. And the last thing in the world he'd want to do, because, you know, he'd never been 12 rounds before, and I don't care what anyone says about how hard you train. It's different when you're in there. You guys both know it. You've been there. It's a lot harder. And I think that may have been slightly there, and it was a smart fight because he would hurt him, but then he didn't really just blow his wad all at once. And I think that was brilliant. I mean, I can't say enough good about him. And I'll also say I don't think this in any way, shape, or form diminishes anything about Bernard, the incredible Hall of Fame career he's had. And if he keeps going, it wouldn't surprise me if he gets some more wins. I don't know. We'll talk about that. See what you think. What do you guys think?
Well, I'm privy to a lot of additional information because I get to fill it up in newspapers. And he's already had three different scenarios. He was back in the gym on Monday doing a light workout. I can do him on the gym, a light workout. And then the first thing he said was, after the fight against I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I might be done. I might be done. I'm not sure. If I come back, it'll have to be either worth my while. And then he came out and said, a student in a way that I have to be able to learn from the information. Down in weight. Now, specifically, he might have Triple G on his mind, getting the Golovkin. So he felt like he wasn't physical enough to match up, with Kovalev. Then he's like, I want one more fight. If you have one more fight, it's going to be one you got to see. This is going to be a night to remember. You got to dress up. Come out there. It's going to be like an event. It's going to be a huge event. But then when he was in class, it's going to be up against anybody, any other Jim Schmo. It's going to be a big event. But then he turned around and he's like, I think I deserve a good one to walk out with. And then he was talking about, just doing like Apollo Creed and taking an unknown, fighter and giving him a shot.
Mm-hmm.
So you've already used three scenarios. So right now, you don't know where he's going.
Yeah. I mean, it almost seems to me that, of course I can't put myself in his shoes, but Bernard, how about a little bit of time off, old man, okay? But, right back into a little light workout on Monday. That's a machine. Wow. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see see what happens here.
Tom, you're old enough to know that when you take time off at that age, then, stuff starts to shut down.
I guess that's the way he sees it. And how about Kovalov's next opponent? What do you guys see with that one?
Well, it's interesting. He kind of turned down to Thomas Stevenson. He said, I think that's better for Bernard to go out on. I've never seen that. I've never seen a fighter say, no, maybe my opponent should fight him next. When asked about maybe getting another belt. Kind of deferred to Hopkins on that one. I don't know what that means, but maybe he's kind of not interested in that for whatever reason.
Well, maybe he's mad with Stevenson jumping ship, going over to Showtime.
Well, that's possible.
But, again, who knows? I think all this stuff will shake out. And he did seem to give the impression, at least at the press conference, that he just sort of pointed to Kathy and said, our former guest. And, more or less said, I'll put it in her hands and she'll handle the details. So I'd love to see the Stevenson fight. But, again, we're back in that old bugaboo about politics and boxing. It just makes me want to scream. And that's where guys like Bernard are becoming more rare and, what did he say? Okay, no one wants to fight the guy. I'll step up and fight him and even switch networks. I mean, how could anyone, if anyone would deny him Hall of Fame entrance on the first ballot, they shouldn't be on the committee, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, right now, we have the talk of Donald Stevenson, and either that fight's going to get shamed into being made, or it's going to turn into the light heavyweight version of Mayweather Pacquiao.
Was that the fight it sued over, too? Wasn't that the fight
what?
Supposed to already have made, but then they ended up filing a lawsuit over it because it didn't get made?
I didn't hear that. It didn't surprise me.
I thought maybe that's why there's such a refusal there on this part. Cause I think I remember something on that. Because Kathy Duvas sued somebody over some kind of... I think that's what it was.
I think what we're going to have here is going to be Kovalev and Stevens. It'll be the next, the light heavyweight version of Mayweather Pacquiao, where, a lot of insults are thrown at, and then it's, okay, we'll fight, but I get the bigger portion. I get the bigger purse. Well, you have to do this test. Well, it's got to be in my hometown. I think Kovalev would travel to Montreal to fight Stevenson. I don't think that would be an issue for him at all. I'm kind of in agreement with that. I think Kovalev would like to win the fight league.
Well, I mean, as far as Bernard hanging it up, in no way it's not going to happen. He's going to try to keep breaking records and set new ones and all that stuff. And, I really want to see him fight Glenn Gossett. I don't think that wants to fight him. It'd be a great time for it, even though there's no belt at stake. Unless Jamaican Cruiserweight wants to.
I kind of get the feeling that now he's going to enter that dreaded gatekeeper territory.
Yeah, and Rockhold at the same time did not look all that special either, I don't think.
Well, I guess you heard Rockhold's plan that he apparently met with Dana and said that when Belford, well, if and when, but he more or less implied when Belford flunks the drug test for his title fight, I'm willing to step up. So that's a good way to leapfrog into it, huh? You know, how about that?
Well, I'm pretty sure I read last week they've already tested Belford, so they're way ahead of him, and I don't think he's on anything now, so good luck with that. Because believe it or not, every single fight ended in a stoppage, and it's only happened a few times in UFC history. That the co-main event was now Iaquinta, the you're seeing it surprising fast, but you know, it's kind of not a surprise when you see in the same campus Chris Weidman. He kind of has a similar style to Chris Weidman when you look at the way he stalks people and goes after them. But it's a smaller version, of course. Took care of Pearson in the second round at the 139 mark with lots of punches.
Yeah, that was a great win for him. Great win for him.
I heard he was pissed too because he did not get a bonus. Very pissed off about that. This is the Sydney card, Sydney, Australia. Of course, that we were talking about last week. Pearson, of course, is from England. The Brotherhood there, Australia. We also had Robert Whitaker beat up Clint Hester. Needs some punches, punches. That was in the second round, at the 243 mark. We had Soa Polele. Paul Harris by TKO. Second round, just 11 seconds left in the round. So we had Jake Matthews with Wagner Rota by technical submission. They make a choke. And Anthony Perosh beat Carlos Augusto Inocente Filho by choke. And our boy, Sam Alvey, I watched this fight. He beat up the hometown guy, Dylan Andrews, who's, I think, one of the only Australian guys on the card. Dylan Andrews, yeah, he was the Ultimate Fighter guy. Sam Alvey came in, I think, from a different season of the Ultimate Fighter, but... he actually brought his kids over there and everything. He made a big trip out of it. He was, of course, all smiles backstage, ready for this one. He's out there to knock that guy out. So definitely looking forward to how he progresses in the UFC. I don't know if he signed a multi-fight deal or what, but he's a great character. You know, he's got his wife in his corner, which is very rare. But you know, the only person I can think of that does that is Misha Tate. Her husband, her boyfriend. So yeah, he brought his kids over there and everything to see this. So you know, it was a big adventure for him. And, obviously, it was successful. So more power to him, and hopefully, he comes back on the show when he's got the belt. Gets that far. We had a couple more fights. We had Lewis Smolka beat Richie Pichulik by knockout in the third round. 18 seconds in. Chris Clements beat Vic Rujic by TKO first round. Daniel Kelly beat Zachrich by submission, Kimura. In the first fight, Marcus Brimage took out Juma Vieke Turkson by knockout head kick. So all stoppages there. And then, of course, we had the Mexico City fight. Nope, that's coming up. This weekend. That's the one that Cain Velasquez was supposed to be on. Then we had the Brazil fight, I should say. And here's where my prediction went way wrong. I thought Ovin St. Preux was going to come out a wrestler in this one. And it turns out he knocked Mauricio Hupa the F out.
That was just a flat-out embarrassment. And I guess right now Chauvin's kind of deciding his next move. But my question is, how much longer can they keep him around with performances like this? I mean, it just seems to, you know, the poor guy, and I'm a huge fan, but, I mean, he's 32 going on 60. And that was my concern going into the fight. I mean, on paper, he had the better quality opponents. He had the better skill set. But just how many more beatings can this guy take?
Right.
And he seems like such a good guy. You know, I just hate to see that.
At the same time, you know, he's always been right there, you know, in the public eye. He's a really big star in the sport. And I don't think he's always made enough money to just, you know, drop and retire now. I think he's one of those guys that... you could make an argument for fighter pay just on his career. He probably should have been paid a lot more because of his name recognition and all that, but he's just never been one of those big, big, big superstars because he loses a couple here, wins a couple there. You know, it's just he's a long way from his prime, number one, and number two is probably just doing it to do it now, just to get by and just to make the money while he still can.
I mean, you remember though, Rich, he fought over in Pride, and the purses were a lot better. When he fought in Pride, the purses were a lot better in those days, and that's why a lot of the talent was going over to Pride. So I don't know, but regardless of the finance, I mean, you got to start wondering about health concerns with the guy. I mean, that was just horrible. I mean, that was as bad as it wasn't as bad as Requiem for a Heavyweight. That went on too long. This was, 34 seconds?
34. Yeah, 34. Mixed martial arts is designed, even the knockout like that, I don't think it's as bad as getting knocked out in the 12th round. After you get beat every single round, I mean, it's a lot better. If there's a better way to lose a fight, it's a lot better to lose quick, you know.
That's true. But my point is, after the beat, after the John Jones beatdown, which was a horrifying, had to be a horrible situation for him, and then those two Henderson fights. And I guess if we start looking back in his career, there were some other ones over in Pride. I mean, you just wonder at what point, when is enough enough? When does the bartender say you're cut off? That's the question.
Yeah. We'll see. I think he's got at least two or three more fights in for sure. But, the UFC likes to kind of throw people to the lions sometimes. I mean, obviously, Ovin St. Preux was ready for anybody the way he came out swinging. But, Mauricio Hua didn't have much time to prepare for the change of opponents there.
Well, you know what they say in show business, the show must go on. And, we're looking at the same situation this weekend. I mean, sometimes you just have to adjust on the fly. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but that's the game.
Right. We also had Warley Alves beat Alex Dubon by unanimous decision. We had a split decision win for Claudio Henrique da Silva over Leon Edwards. Another Ultimate Fighter guy, Diego Lima. We got Jorge Antonio Cesario de Oliveira. A female fight on the card, Juliana de Lima Carnero beat Nina Ansaroff by unanimous decision. Diego Rivas beat Rodolfo Rubio Perez by unanimous decision. Kyle Magalhaes beat Trevor Smith by knockout, knee and punches in the first round, 31 seconds in. Leandro Silva beat Charlie Brenneman by rear naked choke, 4 minutes and 15 seconds in the first round. Thomas Cena beat Tim Gorman by unanimous decision, and Colby Covington beat Wagner Gomez by rear naked choke. And like I said, we got the big Mexico City fight coming up this weekend for the UFC, 180, Verdum versus Hunt. And I hate to bet against Hunt after what he did the last time I bet against him.
Well,
money, I kind of put my money, my mouth where my money should be. Roy Nelson's last fight. This is a quick turnaround for him just to jump right into this fight. And I think he poses a lot of problems for Verdum, who strikes him with that defense, but might actually have some trouble with the guy who can, slug back with him and might have a little better defense.
Well, the only thing I would say to that, though, is I do feel that Fabricio has a few more tools in the toolbox. And I think a lot will depend if things are going bad for Verdum and if he's still conscious, can he take it down? Because I think that Verdum will be able to submit him if he can get it to the ground. I mean, not that that's an easy assignment, but remember, too, that Hunt's 40 years old now, and he's got some miles on him, too. He's been fighting for quite a while, and he's only been the only time he was knocked out, to my knowledge, was with Junior Dos Santos. And I know, I've told you guys a million times with the guy that trained in our gym in the early days, Dan Bogich, when Bobich had him down and was ground and pounding him over in Pride. And Bobich was 340 pounds of powerlifting brute force. He didn't have a lot of cardio, but he couldn't finish Hunt off. I mean, when he got him down and got position, I figured, well, he's just going to finish him off. So Hunt's head's pretty solid. But I somehow, I mean, Verdum, let's face it, he's firing on all eight cylinders now. And I think when he had to leave the UFC and came back, and then he went to Strikeforce and beat Fedor, well, look at the boost that that had to give him. And since then, he's just been on a tear. So I'm going with him. That's where my money's at.
His last loss was to Alistair Overeem in Strikeforce, so he's undefeated in his recent UFC stint here.
Mm-hmm. I have to respect Hunt, though, because again, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, because like some of the questions you were asking earlier about what we can get into maybe later. One of the problems with MMA is these darn injuries. I mean, in boxing, it's more infuriating. Because we don't get to see the fights we want because of politics, and that's just to me is just it just makes me mad. And the UFC and in MMA, I just get discouraged when it's no one's fault. The guys really want to fight. I'm sure Cain doesn't want to be sitting on the sidelines with the first fight in Mexico City. My God, imagine the ovation he'd get down there. But here it's. Hunt had to step up on short notice, but I love Hunt's comment on it. He says, hey, if you're not prepared to do that, don't call yourself a fighter. And that man's a warrior, for sure. And, that proved a lot. One punch and it's over.
So, I like Hunt by an upset here. I think Verdum is a great fighter, but he's sloppy. And he gets tired, and somebody that is the type of puncher that Mark Hunt is. I mean, look at their common opponent, Roy Nelson. Hunt knocked him out, of course, recently, and back in 2012, Verdum had to go to decision with him, three-round decision.
Yeah.
So,
But that's kind of a dangerous game, though. You know, A beats B and B beats C, so, you know, that kind of thing. So A should beat C, or, you know, but... Well, we'll see. I wish we lived closer. I'd bet you an ice cream. I don't bet money with friends. Bet you a pint of Haagen-Dazs.
They're doing kind of, like you said, more tools, but Hunt just has a weird looping style of punch. Just really hard to get out of there. To dominate in any way. His record is very deceiving. 10-8-1. You think, yeah, Jesus, this guy kind of sucks. It's just recent performance. Looks really, really good, I think. So I'd like him to step up here, and hopefully maybe he'll say something about give me some more money. I'm off the microphone, but you know, maybe being in Mexico City might feel some.
I guess the crime situation down there must be out of control, because Fabricio, I guess he's been down there quite some time now, a month or two, I think, and he's training in the mountains, and he had to hire security to drive him up to the mountains. I mean, wow. That must be the Wild West down there in Mexico.
Get to the wrong area where, you know, it's not spring break territory and there's a ton of your friends around. You know, they'll kidnap you, they'll steal your organs. I mean, it's the real deal down there. You don't just hear those stories because people like to tell them. They're true. And you don't go to jail in Mexico. We found out, you know, even a U.S. Marine took months to get him out of jail. Almost, I think, over a
year. Yeah, and I know a lot of guys complain about jail in this country. Jails are no fun, but try one down there in Mexico. See how that goes for size. See how that works.
Yeah, I got so many people paid off by the gangs and the cartels. Anyway, we got some great money. a couple of them that I talked to, but to see him at UFC 188, he's coming back to be in the co-main event. He's 10-8, and he's taken Kelvin Gastelum to step up. I guess he's Kelvin Gastelum's going to have to get on a step stool to match up to Jake Gallenberger. Career record,
well,
28.
Okay. Now, how do you see that one, Rich? How do you feel about that?
I don't see anybody stopping Gastelum, but at the same time, you know, you think a guy like Jake Ellenberger, if he's really, you know, trying to go out there for one last hurrah and get a big, huge win, this would be a lot of motivation to beat this kid. But Gastelum's only tool is not wrestling. You know, he's pretty heavy-handed too. But they both, I think, have really similar reach. Both pretty, you know, same height. I just think Kelvin might be a little bit thicker, muscle-wise. And it's going to be a hell of a battle. A lot of wrestling, I think, because both of them have a real strong wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was so impressed with Kelvin on the show when he was picked last, and that's always a slap in the face, and he was very inexperienced, and he took out Bubba. You remember that on the show, Bubba? I remember that look on Bubba's face when he slapped that choke on him. It was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm losing this. And he just... Then even against the feared Uriah Hall, the guy that was sent someone to the hospital, and he seemed to he didn't let it get into his head. I was very impressed with his toughness. His he's well rounded. And Jake, I would say this much about Jake: I caught some of his training, and he's moving around a bit, like he's doing boxing in Rhonda's gym up there at the Glendale Fighting Club with Edmund. You know, with her stand-up coach, and he's going down to Orange County to work with Munoz, Mark Munoz, on the wrestling, and then he's going to the Gracie Academy in Torrance to work on his jiu-jitsu. So I would say he has no excuses. I mean, he's come up with some disappointments. This is, I hate to say, it's a must-win for him, but again, if he strings together three losses in a row, we got to start wondering, where's that potential that he showed before? What's happened? So this is a very important fight for him, and I think he's in a little bit of trouble in this fight.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. I mean, Joe Silva is a pretty good matchmaker. I mean, he knows the strengths of each guy. I mean, he does a pretty good job. But he actually, you know, people mention his name and stuff, and his name gets thrown around, but he really doesn't get enough credit, I don't think. You know, Dana White.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
You see Joe Silva's face a lot. He's always in the ring after every freaking fight. I bet a lot of people look at him and go, "Who the hell is that guy?" Because he just never gets the spotlight. And you know, he does a great job of putting these cards together and messing these people up. I'm sure he's not the only one that has input, but you know, he's in charge of it. He must do a lot of it. Anyway. We've also got Dennis Bermudez card in a pretty big fight, fighting Ricardo Lama, 14-3. Both of them are 14-3. I mean, that's pretty good matchmaking there. Both kind of getting ready. We'll put them together. Then we got Edgar Garcia, 14-3, fighting Regina, 16-8. Augusto Montano, 13-1, fighting Chris Heatherly. He's 2. Alejandro Perez, 5, fighting Jose Alberto Quinones. 3-1. That sounds like this match of the week there. Leonardo Morales, 4-0, fighting Yair Rodriguez. Leslie Smith, female fight on the card, fighting Chris Kahai. Leslie is 7. Chris Kahai is 10-2. Enrique Fernandez, 15-4-1, fighting Guido Canetti, 6-1. Marco Antonio Beltran, 5-3, fighting Marlon Vera, 6-1. Gabriel Benitez, 6-1, fighting Humberto Brown Morrison, 4-4. Mazio Fullen, never heard of him. These guys don't even have pictures. Fazio Fulton 9-4 fighting Alexander Torres 1-1. Freddie Serrano 1-0. 5-0. That leads a little bit of box wreck now, I guess, for the boxing schedule.
Well, the only real fight I know for this weekend is the Klitschko fight on Saturday.
Klitschko versus Bulev, right?
Yeah. You know what's funny about this one? In my latest Ring magazine that I just got about a week or two ago, they do a segment now every month. They'll past and present, and they'll say, the best I've ever fought. And they'll say, okay, just for example, I think the one was Sugar Ray Leonard. And it's the best he's ever fought. And it would say, fastest man. And he would pick out a fighter that he fought as the fastest man. Fastest man, best chin, best jab, hardest punch, all stuff like that. So this month happened to be Vladimir Klitschko. So one of the questions was our best jab, and he picked Pulev, the guy he hasn't fought yet, having the best jab.
That's kind of funny. Well, what's even funnier is, I don't know the full story. I don't think I cut and pasted the story to my notes, but I did read somewhere in passing that apparently there was some hijinks with the press conference that they had recently where they gave Pulev the totally wrong information about, when it was going to start. Be there and everything, so like half of his people were there, but he didn't show up to his own press conference. Like, they told him he didn't have to go. So I guess that was a practical joke they played on him. He got him pretty good, but I don't think he was laughing. If I can get to it. All kinds of stuff all over the world on a Friday, I guess, this weekend. A lot of mismatches. Everywhere. There's a guy with an 11-81 record. How about that? Fighting the Kingdom. 11-81-5. He's fighting a guy who's 4-2. God. Down in your favorite city there in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Tony. We got a Friday card. I'm waiting for you to start cursing. I didn't get a rise out of you. I don't know. Sammy Beth, Alberto Mosquera was that there. Vasquez 16-0 with 12 knockouts. Mosquera is 21-1-2 with 14 knockouts. We also got. That's a welterweight fight, by the way. We also have a late one. Vlad Salka, 18-4 with 3 knockouts. Monty Mesa Clay, he's 36-3 with 22 knockouts. The Vasquez Mosquera fight is for the USBA welterweight title, and the Salka Clay fight is for the WBC Beaker Box lightweight title. We also got sort of an interesting fight here between Erickson Lubin. Light middleweight, 7-0, 6 knockouts. And Norberto Gonzalez has 20 wins, 5 losses, and 13 knockouts. What's the matter? You like Pittsburgh now, Tony? Thank you. He has this like, pop-up ad, right? He comes up, plays a stupid video, and you can't shut it. Shut it off. Pause the video. And you can't, there's no place to shut the whole freaking ad down. You gotta reload the page or something. Oh, Adamick. Thomas Adamick. I'm sorry. This is the guy. Did you hear about that, Tony?
Yep.
Hanging it up. It's all done.
I heard Adamick and Elliot about it.
Tony's going to retire for the night. He's yawning.
What?
Sounded like you were yawning there.
I did yawn. I did. I was trying to bluff it.
Tony's bored.
Yeah, I'm bored. I'm tired. I'm gonna give you lifestyle.
Yep. Adamack is out. He stepped up to heavyweight. Tried a bunch of times to get a title. Didn't really work out. For his last fight, tough loss. Get his quotes here in a second here. Says, I did what I could in this sport. The days are flying, or the years are flying. He says, my time, and time doesn't stand. My time is up. I'd like to thank my fans for coming. Good luck to the younger generation. Archer Dupka. He's up at the Camarina on Saturday night. This one's, he decided to call it quits. He's 38. He lost some points in the 10-round fight in front of a crowd of 17,000 people. Unanimous decision. And, of course, he, a pretty well-known boxer, Heyday, began his career in 99. Managed to become the WBC light heavyweight champion, as well as the IBF, IBO, and ring cruiserweight champion. He was dubbed a Highlander, Goral, going to his roots in the Highland town. And actually tried to get into Parliament in May of 2014, but they failed to garner enough votes to get him on the ballot, I guess. But, anyway. He is all done.
Well, I think one thing about Tom Sadamek. Tom is a very good fighter, very tough, great chin. His chin was his defense. You go back, especially you watch, yeah, it was. Watch that first fight with Steve Cunningham that you and I did the color commentary on. I think it was you, myself, and Patrick McGillicott that was going on with us that night. It was like the three of us, did the live broadcast of the show. But if you go back and you watch that fight, the only reason he beat Cunningham, and I thought the fight was a draw, was because he knocked him down three times. But he landed the more punches? Cunningham. I mean, he was hitting Adamack with bombs, and he couldn't put him down. You know, then you go back and you look at his fight against, he fought Vitaly Klitschko, the older brother. He took just a tremendous amount of punishment in that fight. He had other fights. You know, even some fights that he won, some fights that he lost, that he was just taking punishment. He said, you know, he wasn't exceptionally fast, and, you know, he was there to be hit. And, you know, it gets to a point where, you know, when you're a fighter that, you rely on your speed, your defense, your reflex, kind of like what Roy Jones did, and you lose them, you're getting, you know, knocked out. You're getting beat. But a lot of times those fights end, you know, quickly. When you're a guy like Adamack that you've never had great speed, great defense, great reflexes, and you've survived just take a tremendous amount of punishment, eventually, you're just going to say, you know what, I can't beat this anymore.
All right. Well, we got some fights in your neck of the woods, Tony. Your boy Joey DeVico is in action this week. Friday night, actually, tomorrow night. Chester, Pennsylvania. It is on GoFightLive.tv if you really want to see him. It's Marshall Kaufman's promotion, David Feldman, and Joey I. Boxing coming together. Marshall Kaufman is the matchmaker, I guess. Joey DeVico is fighting Rayford Johnson, who's 10-15, so seems kind of like a for DeVico.
And going back to a guy like Joey, and you had him in the show, Joey, if you just look at him, I mean, my dad was just around. We went to the one card a few months ago, and Joey and his brother walked in carrying a bag. My dad's like, these guys look like a monster. But they look like the Bushwhackers. So they come in, a big stout, you know, just mean, tough-looking guy, you know, tattoos all over them. But they look like they're pro wrestlers. And Joey's a short, stocky guy, and he'll come out there, and he will throw bombs, and he will take you out, but he's an underrated boxer. When I was covering his fight a few months ago, and he was fighting a guy, Joey's around, you know, 5'9", 5'10". He's about my height. And, you know, big, thickly built guy, 240-some pounds, barrel chest, and you're just expecting that he's coming in there just like a ball. And he was fighting a guy 6'3", about 240 pounds, much longer reach, and Joey was out jabbing him and out boxing him. And he was throwing some bombs in there, too. But, you know what, he won that fight, and you'll appreciate this, with his jab.
Well, he's got the main event there, nothing really huge on the undercard. That's at Harav, Philadelphia. Even though, like you said, it's an hour away. But we also get a big main event in Ontario this weekend on Saturday. Cruiserweight fight. Nathan Daly undefeated at 12-0, and 6 knockouts by Yuri Kambri Kalenga, who is 20-1. 13 knockouts. This is for the interim WBA World Cruiserweight title. Something there. Yeah. Like you said, the big fight of the week is Klitschko. It's a pretty big card over there in Hamburg, Germany, for this fight. That's the main event, obviously. Heavyweights, 12 rounds. Vladimir Klitschko and Kubrat Lev. Lev is 20-0 with 11 knockouts. And Klitschko is 62-3. All three of his losses by knockout. 52 of his good knockouts. 2 out of 62. That's pretty good. And this is for, of course, all the titles. WBA Super World Heavyweight Title, IBF World Heavyweight Title, WBA World Heavyweight Title, and the IBO World Heavyweight Title. Co-main event, dude. Round light welterweight fight Robert Zlatlik, who's 15-0 with 10 knockouts, and Dihaz Barakat, who's 21-1, who has a 15 knockout wins. And Edward Gutnick, 25-3-1 with 9 knockouts, will be fighting a super middleweight 8 rounder with Christian Pollock, who is 20 wins, 6 losses, and 1 draw with 11 knockouts. And over in Ireland, Dublin, Ireland, they have a pretty interesting card in the arena. 12-round co-main events here. The big one is WBC International Middleweight Title Online, Matthew Macklin, 31-5, 20 knockouts, fighting Jorge Sebastian Island, 24-4-2, 12 knockouts. And we have super flyweights, 12 rounds. Khalid Gafay, 12-0, 9 knockouts, fighting for the IBM Intercontinental title against Borseno, who's 35-9-2, 26 knockouts. Guy I actually saw in my hometown of Dorchester. He's on this card, Gary Spike O'Sullivan. He's 17-1 with 10 knockouts. He's fighting Anthony Fitzgerald, 16-6. another guy who's on that same card is Gary, featherweight Patrick Highland, 28-1 with 13 knockouts, fighting Oscar Fico, 10-6. Title on the line in Quintana Roo, Mexico. On Saturday, we got Alejandra Marina Oliveras. She's 31-2-2 with 16 knockouts. Very hard to get that kind of record in a female boxer. She's fighting Erica Annabella Farias, who has got 20 wins and one loss with 10 knockouts. And also on this card, you're Erica's Gamboa. Third guy down on the card. Fighting Jewel Montez de Oca. Gambo is 23-1, 16 knockouts. Oca is 18-3 with 10 knockouts. And the co-main event is actually featherweights Christian Mijares versus Lester Medrano. Mijares is 58 losses, 2 draws, and 25 knockouts. Medrano is 14-2-1. Over in Cebu City, Philippines, we have the WBO World Light Flyweight title on the line between Donny Yankes, 33-1-4 with 19 knockouts, and Carlos Velarde, 26-3-1 with 14 knockouts. We got Milan Melindo, 31-1 with 12 knockouts, fighting a 12-round light flyweight fight against Saul Juarez, who's 20-3. And then we got the IBF Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title on the line between Alberto Vergara, undefeated, 21-0 with 15 knockouts, and Raul Corrales, 22-31. And, some interesting fights on the card. We got a big fight over in South Africa. Interesting card here. On Saturday night, it's Thomas Oosthuizen, 22-0-2 with 8 knockouts, fighting Dennis Gurechev, who 13-4-1 with 8 knockouts, fighting Ali Funeka, fighting welterweight in 12 rounds, 35-4-3 with 29 knockouts, fighting Roman Belayev, who's 14-0 with 10 knockouts. Said this guy's name before, of course. It's a pretty interesting one. Turd Sack Kokian Jim. Right back in action. I think he just recently fought. He's 53-5 with one draw, 33 knockouts. He's fighting Jacob Ton. Jacob is 4-10 with 2 knockouts, fighting a guy with 53 wins. Good luck. Guy with an interesting name. He's expected to have a better record, though. William Warburg. He's 13-67 with 5 draws. William Warburg. He doesn't go to war. But... Oh, it's even worse. These guys are all from the United Kingdom, too, on these cards. Sid Razak. You guys ever hear of this guy? Sid Razak. You know why you never heard of him? He only has 9 wins and 125 losses. But only 5 of those. That's pretty good. 9 wins, 125 losses, and only 5 by knockout. And that's pretty much it for the major fights. Weekend. I'm still on Saturday. We got Jimmy Lang fighting this weekend. 38-5-2, fighting Tony Jeter, 17-4-1, for the vacant NAVA USA middleweight title. That's in Fairfax, Virginia. And also our former guest, Tori Nelson, 12-0-3, fighting Victoria Cisneros. He's 11-16-2. It's for the WIBA World Welterweight title and the vacant Universal Boxing Federation World title. Welterweight title. And let's see, we got one HBO Latino broadcast going on from Texas on Saturday. Gilberto Ramirez Sanchez. Wait, he's 29-0, three knockouts, fighting both Vinicius. Yeah, 27-9-1 with 24 knockouts. This is for the WBO International Super Middleweight title and the NABF Super Middleweight title. Also on this card, we have Oscar Valdez, 8-round featherweight fight. He's 12-0 with 11 knockouts, fighting Alberto Garza. With 1 with 21 knockouts. Still on Saturday. A lot more fights. Done. Now we're finally get to Sunday. Alright. So before we get to our TNT, we're gonna bring TNT back in a minute here. We have to talk about the other fight promotion in MMA. Bellator coming back this weekend will be a blockbuster fighter with two UFC vets, Tito Ortiz versus Stefan Bonner. And, of course, this one's pretty heated with the rivalry. Recently, I guess, Tito claimed that Paul Herrera, who was his old wrestling coach, was actually a spy for him and is feeding Tito information about Bonner's camp. But Bonner pretty much doesn't care if he's giving him information. Because I could watch Tito's fights. I know them all. I know his double leg, his underhook to kneecap. We worked on defending his game. It doesn't matter because my wrestling got a lot better for Paul Herrera. And no one else can be engaged with people. And Bonner also talked about what a blessing it is for him to get to beat up the biggest asshole the sport's ever known.
Yeah, this one, when it comes to trash talk, these guys are world class. World class.
And, of course, story we talked about, before we get to the rest of the card, story we talked about last week, Anthony Johnson coming back into the fold after his domestic violence situation was cleared up, not guilty, all a scam. So now he's been paired up with Alexander Gustafsson in the fight that I wanted to see him in. And the UFC was listening, I guess, to our show last week. It made it happen. It's going to be in his hometown in Sweden, his home country. I don't know if it's his home city, but it's going to be on UFC on Fox 14, January 24th. And Stockholm, Sweden. Big fight for both guys.
Yes.
And I like John right off the bat, I was going to say. And if Cormier doesn't beat John Jones, I think Rumble is going to take him. He's Gustafsson. I mean, that's pretty good benchmark, pretty good ruler, measuring stick for John Jones. Yeah, he does. Of course, co-main event on Bellator 131 card. Will Brooks versus Michael Chandler. Of course, there's no more Chandler versus Alvarez. Alvarez is gone, so Chandler's going to take on Will Brooks. 12-2, Chandler's record. 14-1 is Brooks' record. And it's a pretty interesting matchup. I really don't know who to pick in this one. It's both guys who have their...
Yeah, I question what kind of adjustments Chandler is going to be able to make. I'm sure he's going to have to make some, but I don't know. I just don't know how his evolution is coming along. Well, I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Yes, sir. So, I don't know why I have to reload that. We also have Mo Lawal King Mo, 13-4, fighting Joe Vedipo, who's 17-8. And I think Mo's probably going to get the knockout in this one. It's like they're throwing him in against a tomato can. Oh, I might be insulting Joe Vedipo. Speaking of tomato cans, jeez. 29-11 is Melvin Manhoff. Coming off a quick win recently. They're throwing him right back in there. Got one draw, by the way. 29-11. He's fighting Joe Schilling. Guess what Joe Schilling's record is? 1-3. No. Not that bad. Joe is 1-3, fighting a guy who's 29-11-1. Obviously, yes. Joe Silva does not work for basketball. I don't know if Schilling's some superstar amateur fighter.
Well, I think Schilling comes from a K-1 background. He has a big kickboxing background. But it doesn't sound like he's got the ground game too much. 1-3?
1-3.
This is a huge jump up.
We got a couple guys with a lot of fights. Mike Richmond, 17-5, fighting Nam Phan, who's 20-13, and he's in Bellator now. Former UFC fighter from the Ultimate Fighter. We got AJ Matthews versus Kyle Bolt. Matthews is 6-3. Kyle is 8-3. Ron Henderson versus Jonathan Santa Maria. Henderson 3-0. Santa Maria 2-0. Jordan Bailey versus Alex Higley. Bailey is 4-1. Higley is 2-1. Matt Ramirez 1-0 versus Nick Garcia 7-3. Andy Murad 8-2 fighting Bubba Pugh 3-2. Rolando Perez 7-4-1 versus Mark Borgias 5-2. And Ian Butler 1-0 versus unknown fighter. All right, so we are out of schedule stuff. I have a very short notes file for this week's big stories, so probably the shortest of any show. And we got no guests, so now we're going to do a little section we used to call TNT, because it's Tom and Tony going back and forth about their respective favorite sports. Tony's going to talk a little bit about boxing, and Tom is going to analyze where we're at in mixed martial arts. And this time, we usually pick a topic you can debate about, but tonight we're just going to do the state of the sport, each one. Tony can talk about boxing, just where we're at, what you think of, what developments are. I kind of help. And then Tom can jump in and talk about where he thinks mixed martial arts is at. And also, of course, we've got to talk about where they're both going. So, Tony, start off and run with it. Let's see where we go with this.
All right. So, Jay Rich, thank you. I got I just pulled up the email that you sent earlier when we were discussing bringing this back. The state of our sports right now. With boxing, we got a very good schedule coming up. There's some quality fights coming up over the next few weeks to end out the year. Boxing has always been good with you in that. End of the year, mid-November up until about the end of the year, it's almost every week on a premium channel, you're dreaming, some good fights. We had Bernard Hopkins last week, and I'm going to be a little bit disappointing, but it was still a pretty significant event. We got Manny Pacquiao coming up next weekend against Chris Algieri. I'll be writing my report on that soon. And then you got other fights coming up as well. We got some ATA cards coming up. We got Klitschko coming up this weekend. We got Timothy Bradley. He's coming up. He's fighting very, very, very tough fighter. Decided to disqualify against Brandon Reyes, and I apologize not having his name in front of me right now. But that's going to be a tough fight for Bradley, coming off the loss to Pacquiao, being away for 8 months. So the sport is not dying, as sometimes people will try to make you believe it is. You also mentioned on there, with Golden Boy, and he's going, going to learn and working with Bob Arum. The sport Well, you know, the one thing that always can it help? Of course. Anytime you have cooperation, it can help. Will that help Flangle Mayweather him? I don't know, because he is so desperate against working with Bob Arum. And you asked about some hot prospects for you to watch out for. I'll tell you about a good one coming out of Philadelphia that I think is really going to start catching somebody's attention. And I know his manager very well. It's the son of a former middleweight contender, Eugene Cyclone Hart. And it's a young man by the name of Jesse Hard Work Hart. Undefeated fighter. All but two or three of his wins have come by knockout. He's had a couple chances on TV now, on ESPN, and on ESPN2. I think he had an undercard on NBC. That's what I was trying to think of. But he's a good young fighter. He's got power in both hands, and they're moving him along well. I think he's going to be an exciting kid to look at. You know, also coming up, you know, we still have that, Eastern Invasion. You got, you know, some fighters that are now really picking up our steam, the gloves into the world. Turbolev with that big win. These not maybe young guys. They already may be world champions, but they're people to watch. And because the sport as a whole financially healthy, I would say yes. Because, you know what, when you have these pay-per-view cards, you are still getting significant buy rates. And what's helping the sport out a lot is they are doing, it's not like it used to be, with the afternoon pre-TV cards, like NBC, CBS, ABC, like you used to get almost every weekend, but at least you're getting a few free network TV cards. There was one last week on NBC Sports. We've had a few Saturday afternoon cards that have been on NBC. Garrett, my friend Garrett Wilson was on a few weeks ago, had a loss against a top prospect, but, you know, exposure is still there. And what I do to control the sport, if I could, one title. One title per division. You're not going to have WBA, WBC, IBF, WBO, IBUs, IBCs, Intercontinentals, Diamonds, Gold, Super Champions, Interim Champions, Set of Latin Champions, Oriental Champions, Asian Champions, Hawaiian Champions, Pacific Southwest Champions, Mars, the Moon, Venus, and Uranus Champions. One world. One title. One world. There's only one world. And, you know, that way, you get a chance. Sergey Kovalev, if he's a champ, or if Adonis Stevenson's a champ and the other guy wants it, you got to go to the man. That's the way
yes.
It's got to be. You know, it's going to be a situation. Yeah, exactly. It's got to be a thing where it's like Pacquiao and Mayweather, they happen to be in the same weight class. And only one of you can be the man. And there's only one way to decide it. Don't get your lawyers out there and let your lawyers fight it over. No. You glove up, you suit up, get in there and see who's the man. That's what I would do to change the sport.
All right. Guess it's time for Tom to weigh in now.
Yep. You know, Tony, when I was a kid, we had 8 champions. And now we have, what, 100 and, you know. So, yeah, I definitely couldn't agree with you more. Okay. Well, in general, I'm feeling somewhat of a backlash toward, well, the UFC in particular, not counting any other organizations. A lot of the hardcore guys feel that there's a lot of oversaturation. The cards are watered down, and I disagree with non-acceptance of the lighter weight divisions because I think they're very technical and they can be entertaining. And we've seen in boxing that they can also be pretty damaging. I mean, we've seen some power-punching featherweights. Even a bantamweight back in the early 80s, I believe, a Philadelphia guy, Jeff Chandler. I mean, he had some pop for a guy weighing 118. But there's a lot of backlash now with the women – Like this one guy was saying, they're cramming women down our throats. They're cramming midgets down our throats. Everything's laying prey. It's oversaturation. Then we're getting bad decisions, constant injuries in training. And I think that we're seeing a lot of the hardcore kind of being very selective on what events they're even watching now. And I think Fight Pass has been kind of a disappointment for a lot of people. Fox Sports 2 has been a continual disappointment. And these are the complaints I hear, again, just in the hardcore world. Now, as far as pay-per-view ratings, I understand that the buy rates went down somewhat also. Now, having said that, I do think that when the good matchups come, all that can fly out the window, and I think that they'll really pack them in. But those are some issues on the horizon that are going to be kind of – should at least be addressed. And then to add insult to injury, we've got this guy running the organization that's giving the fans a middle finger all the time, telling everyone to perform an impossible act upon themselves if they don't like what he's doing. So those are some of the clouds on the horizon I see. But I think that the good news, though, as far as going down your list here with ESPN hiring Chael Sonnen, I think that they do feel that they can't keep completely ignoring the sport, or at least putting it just like they would have maybe 10 minutes sometimes after a big event, you know, 1 in the morning on a Saturday night or something. But they may have a little more coverage along those lines, and I think that's a plus. And as far as the PED situation, we just keep seeing these guys flunk and flunk and flunk, and eventually, I don't care how dense you are, that has to sink in, that you just can't get away with it. Whatever they're doing to beat the test is not working. So I would think that that is not anywhere near the issue that was even maybe 4 or 5 months ago. I mean, will it be around forever? I'm sure. But I just don't see it as the big problem now. I mean, the test seemed to be, as we noticed a few weeks ago with the Bellator card, or, you know, about two or three weeks ago, I believe. And as far as Bellator in competition, well, I think Bellator has carved out their own niche. I think that they're, for one thing, they're free. They're not doing the pay-per-view. I think they only did the one pay-per-view. But as far as Saturday night, I think a lot of people are going to be thinking, well, do I want to pay for the pay-per-view to see Werdum and Hunt, or do I want to watch Tito and Bonner for free? So I don't really see it, you know, kind of, I'm going to kind of echo Sean Wheelock on that one. I don't see it as really a direct competition. I think they've got their niche, and I think they'll do fine with that. And as far as the injuries, well, here I just don't know what the answer is to it. I've never seen this rash of injuries. This has never been like this before. And I'm just at a loss. I mean, we've seen more cancellations, and that's just so discouraging because, like as I alluded to earlier, in boxing, we don't get what we want to see, and that just infuriates me because there are individuals, you know, like Kathy Duva and Oscar De La Hoya showed how to do it last weekend. They showed how to do it. They gave us what we wanted. Now, in MMA, the problem is we can get everything signed, but then the guys are hurt so bad in training. So I don't know the what.
They're in different organizations.
Yeah, I mean it's just such this whole training situation. I mean it's and I'm not sure because I know you have to train hard and no one goes in there 100%. But if you're going in there 50%, you're cheating yourself, your fans, your team, and everything else. So I'll just have to keep, you know, I'll keep focusing on it, and something will have to change there, I guess. Now, I think as far as some of the most exciting things happening in the sport, well, that's up to the individuals. And I think if we can keep getting the matchups that we want, that the fans want to see, and if the guys can stay injury-free, every month can be something exciting. I mean, you look at the different divisions, you know, which leads me to who will beat John Jones. Well, we've got, in essence, a round-robin tournament going now. And I think we've got John Jones, and now Daniel Cormier is a live body in that fight. I would never count him out of it. I mean, he's going to have a reach disadvantage. But so far, he has shown himself able to overcome just about anything. So I'm looking forward to that. And then, as you were saying, with Anthony Johnson, if he can get past Gus, and that's a big if, but if he can, I think he has the power to stop Jones. And I think if Gus can hold off Anthony Johnson in a rematch, he's a live body. So, to me, the excitement's the matchups. I don't really see any other drastic changes there. I don't see GSP coming back for a while, and I have to question, I'll have to watch Anderson Silva in the Diaz fight, and then I think we'll be able to answer that question a little more. And finally, as far as improving the sport, it just comes down to we've got to get a handle on these darn injuries in training. It's just wrecking so many events. So that's my take.
All right. Well, I guess I'll wrap it up with my comments on both sports. I like Tony's idea, of course, but I think you need a time machine to get that done, to go back and go back to one title. It's a great idea and a concept, but can you imagine how many people would get fired? I mean, you'd be the Christmas. so many organizations, I mean, people pay them money just to fight. You know, that's where a lot of the politics comes in. One thing I noticed about boxing lately is you seem to have a real concentration of power. I mean, obviously it's not like the UFC where people in one organization don't fight the others. But at the same time, you have somebody who is kind of like the UFC of boxing, and Al Haymon. I mean, he's just gone out there and built an empire. And then you've got the Bellator, I guess, would be kind of Golden Boy now, even though he's technically, I guess, he might be a little bit bigger than Al Haymon. But Al's been pretty much just racking him up. It's like every day I hear somebody else big is signed with Al Haymon. So it's pretty interesting because he's a quiet guy. He's not in the spotlight. He's not out there, you know, making waves and saying a lot, but he's just assembling quietly this big army, and he's been talking about really taking boxing back to the network stations. So that will be huge. And he actually stole it away from Catherine Duba. Her contract that she had, she couldn't duel with Al Haymon. So he picked that up. And they're going to run with it, and we'll see how it does. But I'm excited about that. I really think this Manny Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather fight is, as far as when, but in the next two fights, because that seems very logical that would be the last two for Floyd on his contract. Or he'll do the next two fights against some lesser-known folks, and then that anticipation will build. You know, is he going to come back for one more, the 50th? They'll drum up the interest then. But it all depends on what happens in Algeria. Algeria is undefeated, you know. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that he could win that fight. At the same time, Manny Pacquiao just knocked somebody out in his sparring. It makes you wonder about how his game has improved. It's been a while since he knocked anybody out in the ring and had an actual fight. So, to hear that, and looking forward to finding out who Floyd is for his next fight, because he really, I think, can step up and find somebody competitive, because it's not really, you know, helping the sport for him to fight people that he can just roll. So I really hope he doesn't go near Khan, because I think that's what's going to happen. It's going to be one of these easy times. Nobody wants to see that, especially when, supposedly, you know, putting the capstone on his career. But I didn't think I was going to talk that much about boxing, but that's just like, well, I got the 90-second warning on MMA.
Hey, guys, the one thing I think I'm going to bring up before we get off the air. I'm actually experimenting with something in the next few weeks after the Thanksgiving holiday, probably mid-December sometime. A friend of mine, a young lady that I used to work with years ago, she was an intern at my company. She was doing a personal training and healthy nutrition eating program now. I'm combining with personal training and different nutrients. And I told them that if they were going to come on and eventually talk about some of the things they're doing to help athletes. You help normal people and athletes improve themselves, that maybe we should set up a Saturday Thursday to talk to them.
Yeah, definitely.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll get an email to both of them, and then I'll get your copy on, and that way we can figure it out.
All right, we'll go into a little overtime here. I got to wrap up my MMA comments. Follow up on what Tom said. I like the idea of this tournament style, like you said, UFC light heavyweight division. I'm really excited to see Cormier and what he can do against Jones. I think he's Jones. Really do.
I think he has an excellent chance. Excellent chance.
And then we'll see Gustafson versus Rumble, but I think they're pretty tight, so, I mean, not Gustafson and Rumble, but, I think Cormier and Johnson are pretty tight, so it could happen if Cormier wins and Gustafson loses. So we'll see on that one, but as far as the injuries go, I really think it's just a matter of a lot of guys when they should be toning it down. Like you said, you know, you have to prepare, but at the same time, you have to think about your future. And it's very disturbing to hear you say that, oh yeah, I forgot that round. I don't even remember the fucking hearing. That's what And we've got that study going on at the Ruvo in Vegas. We're starting to take a look at brain. But the one thing that concerns me more than brain injuries is just the long-term health overall of these fighters after a career. I mean, I look at a documentary like The Smashing Machine, and it's, you know, over a decade after that's been made. And really, there's still fighters in that situation that those guys were in. And we spoke to him in person, Mark.
Sure.
Coleman. Mark Coleman. He was in
that. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, talking about all the different drugs that they had to take just to just deal with the pain. And then on top of that, you know, you get sucked into the steroids and what that does. And then on top of that, just the injuries that you sustain. You know, you get a bad knee, you screw your ankle up, next thing you get a bad shoulder, bad neck, and you can't fight anymore. And only a select few are able to find these jobs like Chael Sonnen, because he's got a big mouth and he's a character. He gets this big gig on ESPN, and even though he's been caught juicing six times, it just doesn't help the sport's image, I don't think, to put that kind of guy in the spotlight and reward him for it. But, you know, it just goes to show you that's the kind of stuff it takes to, you know, get people interested.
And you remember another thing about that, Rich. People's attention spans have never been shorter. Never.
Right.
So
exactly.
I get the feeling it's a very smart move. They probably considered that.
And, I mean, obviously they got Ray Lewis, so they're not afraid of a guy with some troubled background.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with somebody about him the other night, how they hate listening to him, because he knows so much about football, but he just has the... This kid said he's got the least understanding of how to get it across to people. He has no clue on how to talk to people at all, especially a wide audience. Number one, he just doesn't have a good command of the English language, period. But just to articulate it, he just has a lot of trouble with that. Now, thank God he's only on Monday Night Football most of the time. But anyway, that's another sport altogether. To wrap up MMA, I think the biggest problem is fighter pay. It always comes back to that. Bellator is owned by Viacom, and it pisses me off that even though they're a free offering, like you said, and they don't have pay-per-views, they're not really stepping up to compete with the price tag that the UFC is putting on the fighters. And the UFC is low, in my opinion, for a lot of these fighters. So to know that Bellator isn't even trying to match up with it, and they're owned by a super conglomerate corporation, Viacom, could be putting tons of money behind this sport. They're not. It's upsetting that so many fighters in boxing and MMA both have a fighter pay problem. Although I think boxing has always had the edge. As far as the bigger, big name fighters getting more overall on average than the MMA fighters. But it's got to improve. And Bellator should have a health insurance program too, just like the UFC. If they don't, I don't know, maybe they do. But that's another thing too. The PED situation, I think we're going to find out that a lot of fighters are going to get thrown off cards.
Yeah.
And when they really starts to crack down on this and does their own independent testing and, you know, starts making examples out of people, maybe then it'll stop and slow down. But I think you're going to have at least 2 years of a lot of people you would be surprised to hear get popped. And, you know, it's, some of the time, like last week we talked about, it's stupid stuff like provincial. I mean, who would think you'd get busted for that?
Yeah, exactly. And if you're going to do it, see how long. Cause what I've heard, it's only in your system a week, but time it. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't see it taking 2 years, Rich, but you may be right. Maybe these guys are a little denser than you think, but I mean, to me, I can't conceive of someone right now. I mean, this is the hot item right now. I mean, everything. Look at that list. Marijuana, testosterone, and modafinil. My God. Okay, I mean, okay, guys, you can't do it. I'm not saying what's right, wrong, whatever. I'm saying it's the rules. And, you know, you've seen how many of them got in trouble. So, I don't know. I don't see it being 2 years. But, hey, maybe you're right.
And as much as I'm concerned about the fighter safety and health and all that, the good news is there still hasn't been a UFC fighter ever died in a fight. A Bellator fighter, none of the big promotions have experienced that. It's always been on the smaller level, and it always seems to be a situation where there's been a failure in the system. So, you know, that's one thing you can at least say they've got right and they're doing a good job with is keeping these fighters from getting killed or getting put in a coma or anything real serious debilitating injuries. That's a pretty good job. So we got to give some credit for that. And, I really would like to see a lot more co-promotion with some of these big promoters, but we'll probably never see the UFC do that.
No.
That's why they never got Fedor Emelianenko, because they didn't want co-promotion. Anyway, I guess that's all for me and us. We're already into overtime, and I have a guest next week. I've just been jamming all day with the wood deliveries and haven't had really much time to call people and book guests. So next week I will be on the call. We'll get somebody and have a lot to discuss because we got Pacquiao's fight coming up.
All right, so let's enjoy everything this weekend. A lot of wild ones, lots to talk about. All right, guys, over and out.
And we'll talk next week.
All right, folks, thanks for stopping by. That's all she wrote. Till next week. Sayonara.